Save big money on your summer project at Menards. Transform your garage with rock-solid floor coatings. Complete your project with a showroom-quality finish in 1 weekend. A one-car kit covers up to 250 square feet. Get everything you need to complete your project with rock-solid floor coatings. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
You're listening to continuing coverage from the trial of Corey Richens from the Hit 'Em Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Lewis?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's see what it took. Please have a seat as you can. Please have a seat. Mr. Bloodworth, you can make sure that mic is still on, and please proceed. Very good.
Thank you, Your Honor. We call it the outset of closing month. We were looking at the aggravated murder charge. I mentioned the first two elements are murder, and then we get into the two aggravators. So the closing up until now has been the murder charge. That is straight murder, but the state, of course, has charged aggravated murder. So now we'll talk about the two aggravators. The why aggravator, money motive, and the how aggravator, administering any substance, in a lethal amount. You'll recall Brooke Carrington's testimony. And when she began her forensic accounting analysis, this drew her attention. The number of overdraft and non-sufficient funds transactions beginning in April. That jumped from 1 in September to 37 in October. That jumped from 1 in September to 37 in October to 77 in December. And Brooke Carrington's analysis was the beginning of the downward financial death spiral. Then Ms. Carrington analyzed the overall debt, and it showed a growing debt picture nearing $8 million in debt when Corey Richens closed on the Midway Mansion. All the while, she's not paying it off. She's barely sending her creditors any money. And it's never an increasing amount of money. It's flat. The payday loans particularly showed distress to Ms. Carrington. This isn't a traditional mortgage. This isn't even hard money lending. This is, give me money today, I'll give you money when you get paid at an extraordinary, exorbitant interest rate. And when Brooke Carrington saw this, she sees the line here go flat. Payday lenders would no longer lend to Corey Richens. She was barely paying them off, or barely paying towards them. Corey Richens lost money flipping homes. You heard Brooke Carrington testify about the extraordinary growth, an unsustainable level of growth for even sophisticated business people. Corey Richens is not a sophisticated business person. She didn't even understand fundamental accounting, fundamental tax reporting. Brooke Carrington plotted out the profitability analysis of each of Corey Richens' home flips. Corey Richens, when she bought a home, when you total up the home she bought and the loan she took out, she started her projects $2 million in the hole. When she was finished her projects, of money that Brooke could trace to expenses, she could only trace about half of it to expenses because Corey Richens did not conduct normal accounting. Corey Richens lost $469,000 on her home flips. But recall that Brooke Carrington testifies there's this other pot out there of $400,000 that I know she lost. I just can't trace it to a particular project. When you add those up, it's nearly $900,000 loss in flipping homes alone. And recall that Brooke Carrington said that does not count the foreclosures. While deliberating, you'll have this. And on the second page, you'll see all the foreclosures. She lost millions more in foreclosures. To include foreclosures on Chelsea Barney's home and the Midway Mansion. Corey Richens would borrow money by any means necessary. Six times she submitted inaccurate bank statements to lenders to get money. Those bank statements reflected her business account and balances in CNE's business account. This evidence proves the level of financial desperation that Corey Richens was in late 2021 and early 2022. The next level of financial desperation is taking $45,000 of your best friend's hard-earned cash tips from waitressing, telling her that you are going to apply that as a down payment to a mortgage on her house where she lives with her partner and her children. And then diverting part of it to pay off FunFi Merchant, a payday lender. And spending the remainder of it, as Brooke Carrington testified, on expenses to rehabilitate homes and servicing existing debt. Then, telling your friend, your best friend, since middle school, that you applied the money to the loan, here's the deed, sign the deed, and then not filing it. And you will see, if you review the Brooke Carrington's schedule that had all the property transactions, you'll see that not only did Corey Richens not file the deed, she took out another loan on the house. That's the loan that was foreclosed on that resulted in Chelsea Barney, her partner, and their children getting evicted and losing their life savings. That is the next level of financial desperation that Corey Richens was in January 2022. There's the tax liabilities. In the grand scheme of the amount of debt, 150 grand in tax liabilities is de minimis, but they were on her mind. There's an interesting little nugget here. She underreported her expenses in flipping homes to her tax account, which resulted in her paying more taxes than she would have. One would think, a sophisticated business person would think to limit their tax liability. That's not what interested Corey Richens. What interested her was the appearance of success in business, the appearance of affluence. And by underreporting her expenses, it looks like she made more money than she did, and she appeared more successful than she was. Because she cared not about being successful, she cared about her facade. She cared about appearing successful. You'll recall that CNE distributed $36,000 to pay some of this $150,000 tax liability, which Corey Richens then diverted to close on a home. And her tax liability was on her mind 2 days before murdering Eric Richens. She spent over an hour and a half on the phone with the IRS. It was on her mind because if the IRS moved on her tax liabilities, Eric would find out. She had to fix it with the IRS before Eric found out. You're familiar. Corey Richens needed cash immediately when she murdered Eric. Eric's long-term earning potential, immaterial. She wanted to close on the Midway Mansion. She had no money to refurbish it, to flip it right away, to run it as an event center. But she was going to close on it. She needed money now. Doesn't matter if Eric's going to earn ton of money down the road. That does not help her now with the Midway Mansion. It does not help her now with servicing her existing debt. She needs money now because she's closing on the Midway Mansion on March the 4th. And when she closes on the Midway Mansion, it's worth $2.9 million. She's borrowing $3.2 million. None of it's her money. She's reaching into other people's pockets to get that money. Not only does she want money to purchase the Midway Mansion, she wants $87,000 for herself. She takes out $87,000 at closing, and how does she spend it? Servicing existing debt and expenses for rehabs. She ultimately closed on the Midway Mansion the day after she murdered Eric. There's an interesting thought here. Did she close on the Midway Mansion in spite of murdering Eric? Or did she close on it because she murdered Eric? She hedged. She was supposed to close on the 4th. She didn't want to close until she knew Eric Richens was dead. Because she knew she would have his money. She knew she could do something with the mansion. And that's why when everybody else signed on the 4th, or in advance of the 4th, she signed on the 5th. It's unconscionable that she closed in spite of his death. It's unconscionable that she closed because of his death. This is probably Corey Richens' true plan for the Midway Mansion. And if Eric had not put most of his assets into trust, could have happened. Recall Brooke Harrington's testimony that after closing on the Midway Mansion, Corey Richens' liabilities were right about $8 million, and she was in the hole $1.6 million. Her net worth was negative $1.6 million when she murdered Eric. And that her business was in financial distress, her financial enterprise was collapsing, had been collapsing, and but for a significant infusion of cash and capital would continue to collapse. That significant infusion of cash and capital was supposed to be Eric Richens' money. You have a fortunate perspective during this case in that you get to observe the defendant. You get to observe Corey Richens. And you observe her affect with some when some witnesses testify, and you observe her affect change when other witnesses testify. You observed that when we played the 911 call during trial, her affect was flat. No emotion. You also observe that when Brooke Harrington testified about the financial distress of her business, she was exorcised. Because that testimony pierced her facade. It pierced her facade of being a successful, privileged, and affluent person. It was a narcissistic injury. She was bothered because the world saw that she is indeed not a success and not affluent. The bulk of Eric Richens' estate was in insurance coverage. Some of it got paid out to the trust, some of it got paid out to Corey Richens. Corey Richens knew this, knew that much of his estate was insurance coverage. And different than taking money from Eric's home equity, different than taking money from Eric's bank account, to take Eric's insurance money, Eric has to die. Now for the aggravator of administration of any substance in a lethal amount. The substance here happened to have been fentanyl. could have been any part of the illicit street drug that she bought, happened to be fentanyl that she administered in a Moscow mill, and a shot or a shot. But we know that's how she administered it, because it was in his belly. We know it was a lethal amount. The death certificate, fentanyl killed him. That's the substance, lethal amount. Can be as small as 3 nanograms per milliliter. And in this case, he had 15. 5 times what can be a lethal amount. That, by the way, is not an accident. That amount of fentanyl shows that Corey Richens wanted Eric not only dead, but good and dead. Now, count 2, the aggravated murder. The elements are the same as count 1. The only difference is attempt. Attempt requires, as the court instructed, a substantial step. There's plenty of substantial steps, from ordering the drugs to making the Moscow mule. Here, the aggravated murder count proves the attempted aggravated murder count, and vice versa. The commonalities between Corey Richens' conduct are not coincidental. In each instance, she purchased drugs from Carmen Lauber a few days out. In each instance, she spoke with the IRS a few days out. Taxes were on her mind. Eric would find out if the IRS was after them. In each case, she had an immediate financial stressor. We just discussed closing on the Midway Mansion. If you look at Brooke Carrington's materials, she had a note due on Chelsea Barney's house shortly before February the 14th. She had an immediate financial stressor in each instance. In each instance, she administered the substance in a way that Eric would ingest it. On Valentine's Day, it was a sandwich. When she murdered him, it was a drink. Notice that she learned from her mistake. One can season a sandwich with fentanyl. Eric can eat it, tell something's wrong, set the fentanyl-laced sandwich aside. You throw a lemon drop shot back. By the time Eric would notice, the shot was in. It was in his body. Moscow mule, just to be good and sure. In each case, she leaves Eric alone. She distances herself from the dirty deed. She leaves the bedroom when she murders him. She leaves the county when she attempts to murder him. As part of her alibi, not only can she not be present, she has to be distant. So that when she calls 911, she says, "I wasn't even there. I was in Utah County." And in each case, she has a delayed response, right? It's the delayed response in calling 911 when she murders him. And it's her delayed response in returning home when she failed to murder him. The element of, again, is it Corey Richens? Yes. She is the person with the means, the motive, and the opportunity. Nobody else. The means, illicit street drugs and the sandwich. The motive, money, fresh start at life. The opportunity, she left the sandwich in Eric's truck. Intentionally or knowingly caused the death of Eric Richens, right? It's attempt, so attempted to cause the death of Eric Richens. The same reasons. She told Becky Lloyd it would be better if he were dead. She wanted the Michael Jackson stuff, the lethal stuff, the fatal stuff, the stuff that kills. She wanted Eric Richens' life insurance. You only get life insurance when Eric's dead. The commonalities persist. Corey Richens ordered fentanyl from Carmen Lauber, or ordered something from Carmen Lauber, the Michael Jackson stuff, the fatal stuff. Carmen says, I told her I could get her fentanyl. She said, okay, get the fentanyl. But she ordered illicit street drugs from Carmen Lauber, who got them from Robert Crozier at the Maverick in Draper. Again, the volume of calls during the drug purchase between both Corey Richens and Carmen Lauber and Robert Crozier and Carmen Lauber. And recall, we don't have the content of the texts because they were deleted from Corey Richens' phone, deleted from Carmen Lauber's phone, Crozier lost his phone. The IRS was on her mind. She called him twice, 3 days before attempting to murder Eric Richens. We know she placed the call to the Mirror Lake Diner to order a potentially fatal sandwich. We know that Corey ordered it. Corey picked it up in person. It was swiped. Don't know if you can tell that's Corey Richens' signature, but notice it's one stroke. There's no pen lift. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Corey Richens then distanced herself. She left the sandwich for Eric, and she drove an hour away. Meet up with Josh Grossman on Valentine's Day. There's another commonality between the attempted murder and the murder, of course. They're big days. Losing your husband on Valentine's Day, that garners extra sympathy, extra attention. Losing your husband the same day you're supposed to close on the biggest purchase of your life, that garners extra attention. The type of attention that Corey Richens relishes in. You heard Cody Richens testify how Eric was a cowboy when it came to injury or illness. He worked through it all. He cowboyed up. Cowboys don't go to the hospital unless they're near death. They don't even think about going to the hospital unless they're near death. And at 11:33, Eric's thinking about going to the hospital. And then all the activity, the physical activity on his phone ceases. For 87 minutes in the middle of a busy work day. Shortly after activity resumes in Eric's phone, he calls his best friend and business partner Cody Wright. Recall Cody said he could hear the fear in Eric's voice, a fear he'd only heard twice before. Both times associated with death. A fear he heard when Eric told him his mother had passed away, and a fear he heard when someone who struck Eric's truck in an automobile accident, and Eric thought that person might have passed away. He then spoke with his hunting buddy and close friend, Josh Kays. You know and learn a lot about somebody when you hunt together and travel together. And Josh Kays said, Eric sounded somber and serious. Josh asked Eric perhaps the two most pertinent questions: if he was going to the hospital, and what was he going to do about it? Let's turn to alley staking, singular, not plural. Clearly, close with Corey. Friends since middle school. You observed the banter when Ms. Staking was testifying, the banter between her and Corey Richens. It was friendly. She's still friendly with her. And Allie Staking testified about how a week or two after Valentine's Day, when Corey Richens attempted to murder Eric, when I questioned her, she said, well, Eric jokingly, kind of jokingly, maybe jokingly, said that Corey Richens tried to poison me. Perhaps joking. But Corey Richens' reaction is what was important here. Corey said no. She got defenses. Defensive. That is not what happened. It was like an allergic reaction or something. It wasn't at all dramatic. She is covering up her poisoning him. Then when defense counsel questioned Ms. Staking, Ms. Staking kind of backed off the jokiness of Eric's comment and attributed the jokiness to everyone else. Ali Staking said, defense counsel questioned, what did he tell you? That he believed Corey had tried to poison him. Maybe it was one of those joking things like, I'm sending a message to Corey Richens. I know what you tried to did. I'm joking about it, but I'm going to let you know. Maybe he was serious. Either way, comes back to Corey Richens trying to poison him on Valentine's Day. Corey Richens repeatedly tries to cover up that she tried to murder Eric on Valentine's Day. She says she was home with him. She tells her best friend, Chelsea Barney, I was home with him. She was not. She was with Josh Grossman. She did not come home until after 6:30 p.m. She was saying he never broke out in hives or used an EpiPen. That means he broke out in hives and used an EpiPen. When she spoke with her mother on August the 22nd, when she says she didn't put a love note and the sandwich in the front seat of his truck, she put a love note and the sandwich in the front seat of his truck. She is trying to distance herself. She is trying to cover up. She is trying to deflect. When Eric said he was going, thinking about heading to the hospital, what did she say? Take a nap. Call me when you're up. She's saying that thinking he will take a nap and not wake up. When he does, Eric texts Corey. He's asking if she's home because he had just said, I'm going to hospital. Then he had stopped communicating, or he said, I'm thinking about going to the hospital, and then stopped communicating for nearly 2 hours. He's figuring she was coming home to assist him, but she wasn't. She's in Provo waiting for her cabinet installer guy. Maybe. She says then she's going to head home in 20 minutes. Nearly 2 hours later, question mark, where are you? You were heading home 20 minutes ago. She responds, what? Thanks for answering. Did you call? You didn't call. She thinks he's heading home. She's not. She's trying to figure out what to do. She's trying to figure out what to do because Eric survived. She had not planned on that. She is delaying to make her plan. And then at 6:34, Eric texts, we're headed in there. Food is on the front seat of his truck. The same place she left the poison sandwich with the love note. Eric Richens is telling her, I know what you did. That is the attempted aggravated murder. But that is the attempted murder. Now, of course, we have the two aggravators. They're the same. Same as with the aggravated murder. The money motive, same. Similar financial distress, same. There's also the first started life motive, right? That hasn't changed a bit. Josh Grossman, it's Josh Grossman on Valentine's Day, and he's Josh Grossman on March the 4th. Money motive the same, fresh start at life motive the same. Now the second aggravator, administration of any substance in a lethal amount. Recall Dr. Eric Christensen's testimony that hives, EpiPen, all consistent with an opiate-like or an opiate-allergic-like response, a pseudo-allergic response. Hives, EpiPen, along with zero activity, shows that Corey Richens attempted to administer the illicit street drugs that she bought 3 days earlier from Carmen Lauber in a lethal amount. She just failed. Next guy. Okay, the insurance fraud. There are two insurance frauds. Let me distinguish them, please, for you. The first one is a scheme charge, a fraud scheme. The second one is a fraud claim charge. Count three, the scheme charge relates to the $100,000 TruStage policy. We're going to put it up in a minute. The fraud claim charge relates to the $250,000 TruStage policy. The forgery, which we will get to, is a forgery related to count three, the scheme charge. Let me unpack them now. Okay. Different than the aggravated murder and attempted aggravated murder, I'll address all elements of the insurance fraud scheme kind of at once because they all jump out of this single page. And the scheme is quite simple. Corey Richens wanted to murder Eric Richens, thus took out an insurance policy on his life to get money for murdering Eric Richens. Then she murdered Eric Richens, and then she submitted a claim to get the money. That is the scheme. And we know it was Corey Richens because everything on this application for this $100,000 Truest Agent insurance policy returns to Corey Richens. Corey Richens received the application because she was a member of PedFed. The application was addressed to her at her work address, so she would have been the one to receive it. If there was any questions about it, any further follow-up mailings about it, they would go to her and not to Eric. This number, this applicant information is all her, but the partner information is all her as well. Her work address, no email address where they could contact Eric. We'll get to the Social Security number in a minute. The primary phone, that's not Eric's phone. You'll see that Eric's phone is 801-792-9317. And when you look at this closely during deliberations, you'll see that was originally a 7 that she later marked up to read like an 8. She initially wrote his correct phone number, then did not want anyone from True States to call him, so she changed the 7 to an 8. So that Eric would never know that this policy existed. After Corey Richens took $250,000 out of his Eric's home equity, he put all of his insurance that he knew about into the trust. If Eric had filled this out, the beneficiary would have been the trust, not Corey Richens. Then we'll get to the signature. That's the fraud count 5 as well. It plays into this. We'll talk to it during count 3. But it's also the freestanding charge in count 5. Let's go to the next page. The Social Security number was blacked out for privacy reasons on the application we just reviewed. But you'll recall Ann Coates testifying that the last 6 digits were transposed. We all know our own Social Security numbers. We often get a little bit confused on our spouses. Eric did not sign the application. Matt Throckmorton, the handwriting expert. Eric did not sign it. It was probably a simulated forgery. Recall his testimony that Eric Richens has pen lifts in his signature. The forged one didn't have any pen lifts. You'll see Corey Richens' signature throughout this case. No pen lifts. Then Corey Richens filed a claim for this $100,000 two-stage policy. It's actually the same claim for both policies. And she said she really does not know where her husband, Eric, got the fentanyl from. Of course she knows. She ordered it from Carmen Lauber. That is the fraud scheme. Plan to kill Eric, fill out life insurance so I can get money for killing Eric, kill Eric, and then claim the money. Now for the insurance fraud claim count four. This is the TrueStage $250,000 policy. This is the claimant's statement filled out. Corey Richens beneficiary, Corey Richens email, Corey Richens address. Everything about this claim says Corey Richens is submitting this claim. And then, like before, the fraud here, the falseness of it is she says she doesn't know where the fentanyl came from, when in fact she ordered illicit street drugs from Carmen Lauber. And indeed, later in the Walk the Logs dog letter, admits to admitting, asking Carmen for fentanyl. Finally, count five, the forgery charge. We've discussed most of the forgery when we discussed count three, but there's this without the authority to do so element. It's not a forgery if Eric gave Corey Richens permission. The state has to prove that Corey Richens did not sign Eric's name with permission, with authority. All of the evidence in this case proves that Corey Richens does not ask for permission, she takes. She took with the home equity loan. She took other people's money. She's a taker, not an asker. Finally, like I mentioned earlier, Eric Richens, the evidence proves, would have put the trust as the beneficiary, not Corey Richens. If he had given permission, it would have been permission to make the trust the beneficiary. That's the forgery charge. Let's please now turn to Corey's motive for a fresh start at life. You heard the instructions. The state does not have to prove any motive except for the pecuniary gain motive because it's an aggravator. But motive explains why Corey murdered Eric Richens, why she attempted to murder him. Motive explains a lot here. These texts at this point are familiar. The day after Corey Richens speaks with Becky Lloyd and tells Becky Lloyd Eric she would be better if Eric were dead, she texts Josh Grossman that she's in love with him, a man, not her husband. I was divorced right now and asked you to marry me, would you? That's the day after the attempted murder. If he could just go away and you could just be here, life would be so perfect. We're familiar with this text. We've read it already today. I ask you to read it again. This time, replace the word divorce with the word murder. This graphic shows a juxtaposition between Josh and Eric that is insightful to what Corey thinks about each of them. In each instance, she is texting, well, she is kind of simultaneously texting. These are laid out chronologically. She is simultaneously texting with both Josh and Eric about closing on the Midway Mansion. And she's so excited with, she is so excited texting with Josh. I can't believe it. I want to celebrate with you. Love you, love you, love you. Thank you for always being my support, shoulder, and rock. I need you all the time. Some things I could never do without your encouragement. You have no idea how much I appreciate you. Eric tries to reach out. You want a shot? Can't. Sorry, busy. Then right back to Josh Grossman. To me, you're worth millions a year. I'm honored to be your best friend, your lover, your go-to. Life is going to be different, I promise. You're one hell of a patient person. I hate your hard days. I wish I could be there to turn them around for you. Can I try Friday? Give me a few days. Hang in there until then, please. By Friday, of course, Eric Richens was dead. Corey had murdered him. She's right, life's going to be different. She promised him. It was. Then, 16 days after Corey Richens murdered Eric, are we there yet? And then 1 month later, Corey's ready for Eric. Sorry, Corey's ready for Josh to be her husband. Josh Grossman loved Corey Richens. He believed that she loved him. Not sure that's true. You saw him testified. He was gutted. As a grown-ass man, gutted. You also observed Corey Richens' affect when he testified. Flat. The evidence proves that Corey Richens murdered, attempted to murder Eric Richens, and that she committed 2 counts of insurance fraud and forgery. The evidence does not support any other rational explanation. The state, since its opening statement, has stressed the requirement to consider the evidence that has been admitted and not what the attorneys say. What the attorneys say, insinuate, speculate, is not evidence. Please let me show you why the state has stressed this. In the defense's opening statement, counsel said that the evidence will show that Corey Richens had a 1/2 interest in the Willow Court home. There is no evidence of that, and indeed contrary evidence. Defense counsel said that the evidence would show that Eric was always checking Corey's phone. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that the evidence will show Eric and Corey Richens went to marriage counseling. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that the evidence will show in the few weeks before Eric died, his closest friend thought that he and Corey Richens were the happiest together that the friend had ever seen. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that the night Eric died, he and Corey Richens had their drinks and set their cups in the sink. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that the evidence will show that the cups were sitting in the sink and the nanny put them in the dishwasher the next morning and they still had fluid in them. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that Eric talked to a friend named Scott Wagner at 10 p.m. the night he died. There's no evidence of that, and indeed contrary evidence. Defense counsel said that the evidence would show Eric unlocked Corey Richens' phone at 10:30 p.m. the night he died, and this is the last thing that he did. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that the evidence would show investigators interviewed Corey over and over and over again about what happened the night that Eric died. There's no evidence of that. Defense counsel said that the evidence would show that law enforcement secretly recorded Corey Richens' phone conversations for over a year after Eric died. There's no evidence of that, and indeed contrary evidence. Defense counsel said that you will hear Corey Richens telling her family that she purchased pain pills for Eric at his request. You did not hear that, although she did write it in the walk the dog letter 4 months after she was arrested. In listening to defense counsel's closing argument, please, only consider the evidence that has been admitted.
More continuous coverage from the trial of Corey Richens from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment.